Napa know-how.
There are lots of amazing cars on the road, but perhaps none more amazing than the paid-off car. It may not be pretty, but the price is right. Heck, if you keep that thing running, it'll actually start paying you. Because with Napa Rewards, for every $100 you spend, you'll get $5 off. So keep your car running longer, stronger with Napa Rewards and watch the savings start rolling in. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
Always locked on heat. Biscayne, South Beach. Goldberg and Ramil. Talking heat, body chill.
You know.
Got the stats and the news. Got the facts and the views. Never know what they gon' say. Mailbag on a Monday. Pat Riles got the pack ride. Coach Spo got the know-how. Three bands in the raps now. Heat Nation, that's a packed house. Heat talk at the game time. Heat talk every day. I'm always locked on heat. Got it locked on heat. Always locked on heat. Keep it locked on heat. Seat geek for the cheap. What's the day got the heat?
And now, your locked on heat hopes. Wes Goldberg and David Ramil.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil, and we are recapping the Miami Heat's 117-115 win over the Washington Wizards. The Heat improve to 3-2 in the preseason. They've got one more game left. A pretty exciting game, despite Miami not... They're going without Goran Dragic, Deion Waiters, and Hassan Whiteside. All of them out, not because of injury, but for rest. They just... Spoelstra decided to rest them. The Heat went down early, 30-19 after the first quarter. They had a strong second quarter, evened it up to 50... Or close to evened it up, 53-50 at halftime, just down by 3 points. And it was pretty close there for most of the game until the very end when Justice Winslow and Jordan Mickey, of all people, kind of took over, right, David?
Absolutely. They showed some real flash there. Winslow struggled a little bit offensively, but with the ball in his hands, he really seemed to manage the offense fairly well. And he looked like a pretty competent passer playmaker. And Jordan Mickey in particular, I think, looked pretty good off the bench as well. It was... Not a typical game, I think you could say. Obviously, with the three starters missing, it's not like you're going to get much here that I think you can extrapolate into the regular season. But again, it shows that a lot of guys are competing for minutes, competing for playing time. And there were some strong performances from guys that will probably be glued to the bench, if even on the team at all. So it was an exciting game. And again, you see the guys on the bench, the starting unit, guys like Deion and Goran there, they were cheering their teammates on. And it just seems like it got everybody into it, and they're very emotionally involved in the outcome of the game, even though, of course, it is just a preseason game.
And we don't want to bury the lead here. Jordan Mickey with the game-winning three-point shot with just a few seconds left on the clock with the go-ahead three to win the game for the Heat. He inbounds the play. There's about 5 or 6 seconds left on the clock. The Heat have the ball. They're down. Mickey inbounds it to Matt Williams. Williams immediately gets it back to Mickey. Mickey drains a three-pointer from 25, 26 feet out, and the Heat go ahead and win the game. Washington, there wasn't enough time left for them to do anything. Mickey hits a game-winner. That's a big play for a guy who may or may not be on the team.
Then it all started with Matt Williams. I'm surprised he didn't drop your typical go Knights.
Go Knights. All right, well, you mentioned Winslow before and how he had the ball in his hands, and that leads us to our big idea for the game, and that's, what do we do with Justice Winslow? Because at the end of this game, just like in the end of almost every preseason game, it's been Justice Winslow plus G League / deep bench guy time, right? It's always been right. Winslow's the leader here. He's basically playing point guard, and he's surrounded by a bunch of guys that are either going to be at the end of Miami's bench this year or in the G League, with the Sioux Falls Skyforce, or maybe on one of their two-way contracts. And in that role... And granted, against other, opposing reserves as well, most of the time. In that role, Winslow's been very effective. He seems, for somebody that is not comfortable kind of receiving the ball in catch-and-shoot situations, he is unbelievably comfortable when he's bringing the ball up. Haven't you noticed that? Isn't that a weird thing? How comfortable he can be just running an offense, facilitating an offense, but is almost like starstruck when he gets the ball from a pass from somebody else.
Yeah, and you know, it kind of reminds me of a little bit of what I had mentioned as far as his player preview a couple mm-hmm. of days ago, or maybe was it last week, when I talked about maybe the best thing for Winslow would be to concentrate on everything else, because we know obviously that the shooting is still going to be a work in progress. He did collect, you know, he did make one shot on the night. It was a three-pointer on a catch and shoot. He looked smooth in that, you know, that one particular shot, but he went 1 of 7 overall, played 32 minutes, more than any other player mm-hmm. on the Heat roster. But, you know, I think, Tony Fiorentino on the Heat broadcast crew pointed out the fact that Winslow is still kind of getting his legs, spent so much time injured last year, only played, 16 games total?
18 games. Yeah.
18 games. And, you know, still looks very uncomfortable. Look, he's still 21. You know, it's in his third year. He hasn't gotten the kind of playing time. He's played significantly less than Josh Richardson even. And you know, this is, he just doesn't look quite comfortable yet. And obviously, I think he's still putting a lot of pressure on himself when it comes to shooting. But yes, when it comes to bringing the ball up, he looked really smooth going up against smaller guys. Went behind his back on a couple dribble possessions there. Switches between hands very comfortable. Even at one point towards the end of the game, had the ball in his hands and was comfortable kind of letting the play clock wind down before initiating the offense. It just looked like a smooth playmaker.
He's got the slow motion crossover. He has the Euro step. We've seen it. He's very good in the drive and kick game. Like, he is tremendous, and maybe it's his size and his court vision. He's tremendous from passing from in the paint or underneath the rim, right? There's multiple times where he's, you know, throwing cross-court passes or passes from, you know, that old Steve Nash going in and out and then passing it out to the perimeter above the break. And he's nothing short of very good at that. And it's just,
looked a little Wade-like to me. Is that a stretch?
No, not at all. I think he's very much that, where it's just that slow poke, kind of slow motion drive and kick. You know, it seems like he's in control. He's moving at a pace that's comfortable for him, while everybody else is kind of warring around him. But he's in control of it, and he looks so smooth and comfortable doing it. And that's why I keep going back to that word comfortable, because it's amazing how he's able to handle that, which is hard. Like, it is hard for point guards to enter the NBA and be at the age of 21, do that. And I don't care if it's the G League, if it's against reserves in preseason. We've seen this for 3 years with Winslow. He is comfortable in that position. It's just when he's off ball, he completely psychs himself out. He doesn't really know what he's doing. And that's where we kind of wanted to go with this is, Winslow in those situations is really good, but it's hard to get him into those rotations, into those lineups if you're Eric Spoelstra, because either you're playing him with the starters, and if you're doing that, then we know the story there, right? It hurts your spacing. You can't put the ball in his hands because that's the job of Dragic and Waiters, so he's not going to be in that position. And then if you put him with the reserves, now with James Johnson, it looks like he's going to be coming off the bench here. It looks like, you know, there was no Whiteside tonight. So Spo started Olynyk at center, but then opted to start Okoro White at power forward in order to keep the Johnson and Johnson duo coming off the bench. So it seems like Olynyk is going to be the starter, and more importantly, it seems like James Johnson is coming off the bench. And if that's the case, then Winslow can't have the James Johnson role off the bench, because James Johnson has a James Johnson role off the bench. So at what point, what do you do with Winslow? Because when he's in with these guys, he ends up just standing in the corner.
That's a tough call. I mean,
I don't expect you to have the answer. This is a hard question.
I know, absolutely. It concerns me, right? I thought Rodney Magruder was likely the odd man out, and it seems like that's no longer the case. Now it seems like he's going to be firmly ensconced in the starting lineup, and you're right. It looks like there might be just a matter of distributing minutes, and unfortunately, it looks like Justice is odd man out. That seems like you're you're kind of stifling his development. I know that's a point that's been brought up to us by some of our followers mm-hmm. on Twitter, and I don't know how that projects, to be honest with you, because again, he does have obvious strengths there as a playmaker, but I'm not sure what to say.
So, quick reminder: we're going to get to some of our Twitter comments here, but make sure that you subscribe to David Locke's Locked On NBA podcast. I can't tell you enough. It's a must listen if you're just a fan of the NBA. He's got interviews with league insiders, scouts, coaches. Also check out the Locked On NBA channel so that you get all of the Locked On NBA team podcasts in one feed on your podcast app. You don't have to go searching around for a bunch of different shows. It's all right there for you. Also make sure that you check out the Locked On NFL side of the podcast network. That includes Locked On Dolphins, who somehow came out with a win. But we'll see how long that can go on for. I'm not optimistic. But you should be checking out the Locked On NBA channel, the Locked On NFL channel. A lot of really great stuff on the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. Napa
Know How. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know How. Napa Know How. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
So, our first Twitter comment comes from, which one should we do? Let's go with Kevin. He says, okay. On Winslow playing point guard, that's Winslow's fit offensively, but what do you do about James Johnson, right? And this was in response to me on Twitter. I actually said, Winslow, and this is echoing what I've said on the last couple podcasts, I think Winslow is a point guard. It just, if you look at what he does well and what he doesn't do well, he's like a taller Ricky Rubio. It's weird. And it's just a taller, thicker Ricky Rubio. And so I mentioned this on Twitter, and Kevin responded that he agreed, but what do you do about James Johnson? And that's what we've been talking about. If James Johnson is also going to be this point forward, it's almost like you have to choose one, right, David? And like you were saying, is Winslow the odd man out at that point?
Yeah, I mean, do you start considering trading Winslow? I mean, it's still early, and it looks like, you know, obviously Spoelstra has a lot of different options during the preseason. He's going to use all of them. I wonder if that'll be the case during the regular season. It seems like one of the strengths of this team is the incredible depth and versatility. You wonder if they'll continue to move forward in that direction. I don't know. It seems like very early still. Yeah.
No, but it is early, but you're right. If this is going to be something that Spoelstra is going to rub his temples over every night, right? How do I get Winslow in the game? How do I maximize his strengths? And you start having to jigger your rotations in ways where it's a suboptimal lineup, but it's one that's optimal for Winslow's strengths. You know what I mean? If you end up just taking out all of your best ball handlers so that Winslow could do it. I wonder what that looks like, you know, and if that's what Spoelstra has to do in order to maximize Winslow's strengths and kind of groom this guy with so much potential, because he certainly has that. Is he just better off trading? I'm saying, like, we've got the Winslow we want now in James Johnson, right? We have that, and we've got him on a 4-year contract, so it's not like this is going away anytime soon, right? Winslow's young, James Johnson's committed for 4 more years. I don't know if you actively shop Winslow because of it, but it's certainly on the table if somebody calls, right?
Yeah. Could we see a stint for Winslow in Sioux Falls, perhaps? Kind of getting him, you know, just to be more familiar with that role as the primary playmaker, and also wait until his offense catches up with his playmaking ability, so that maybe by the time he does come back, maybe he'll be ready to assume a bigger bulk of the minutes. I mean, at some point, I think you would probably prefer having a guy like that in the lineup over Magruder even, but I don't know. It's just right now Magruder is outplaying almost everybody else. I mean, he just doesn't stop. He's been shooting extremely well. His effort has been consistent, but obviously there's a higher ceiling for a guy like Winslow. You'd want him to reach that potential, and he's just not going to get the playing time.
I do think that you have to play. I think if there is a goal to build, to develop Winslow and help him, I think you got to start him. If you've got James Johnson coming off the bench with Tyler Johnson, we saw that when James Johnson and Tyler Johnson come off the bench, it is dynamic and it is advantageous for the Heat. And that's why that it seems like Spoelstra, at least for the start of the regular season, is going to go that route. But also at the same time, it's a little cliquish. You know, they're not freezing everybody else out, but they are so, James Johnson, Tyler Johnson, they're so in tune with each other. There's such a chemistry there that they're looking for each other and they're getting the ball to each other and they are playing an effective version of basketball. But what happens is that Winslow gets frozen out. And there were so many times there, in that second quarter particularly, where all the bench unit came in. It was Winslow, James Johnson, Tyler Johnson, and two other guys. I think Bam at some point, Olynyk at another. And yeah. those guys were playing great basketball together, but Winslow was just kind of awkwardly standing in the corner, and that goes to our next Twitter comment. Playing Winslow is playing with four people. He's horrible. And that comes from Estadista on Twitter. And I really shouldn't have put that in like a size 8 font on my screen here, but I got
That's okay.
So, and look, that seemed to be the case, right? Is that it was kind of like Winslow was just awkwardly standing in the corner. And it was kind of 4-on-5. And it works when James Johnson and Tyler Johnson are as good as they are, but that's not something that you – it's not ideal, right?
Right. No, this is why Winslow is the big thing with the game, because while there are highlights, there are also concerns about, you know, his impact and his offense. And to Estadista's point, you know, it seems like he just doesn't feel comfortable. He's got the ball in his hands. If he's not passing it out, if he's driving to the hoop – he's putting up an inordinate amount of bad shots at the rim, like high off the glass with no chance of falling, looking for a foul call. And he doesn't have the kind of, I don't know, the veteran presence at this point to earn those trips to the line. Maybe he's trying to emulate a little bit of a Harden-esque style and trying to draw fouls, but he's certainly not there at this point. I could see that.
Get the star calls, right?
Yeah, I could see that, though, being something that he can implement. If he's got that slow, deliberate dribble, he just needs to know how to work. I mean, if Harden, however you may or may not like Harden's game, one thing he's absolutely masterful is knowing when to draw contact.
Harden took that from Dwayne Wade, and we just made the Winslow-Wade comparison, right? So, correct. I mean, just go watch film on Wade, too. And I want to go back to something you said earlier about Winslow. He had only played 18 games last year. He missed most of the year. He had a couple of injuries that it took a long rehab for. He didn't start playing 5-on-5 contact drills until just before training camp, right? So this is a guy that needs to work his way in. This is a team that was hot at the second half of last season. Olynyk got to go play in the playoffs with Boston and had that great game against Washington. These are all guys that are coming off of highs from last season. Winslow is not, right? He's coming off his career low, if anything. So that's a really good point that you made, and I just kind of wanted to hammer it home. We've got to be patient with him. And he's even though he's healthy, and it's hard, you know, it's easy to forget that, you know, just because he's healthy, he should be back. That's not the case, right? These guys, this is an established group. It's an established team, and he wasn't sure what his role would be, period, let alone what it would be in this kind of tight-knit group that has all this continuity. So we need to be patient with him, and I respect Spoelstra for playing him a team high in minutes. He was just like, dude, let's just roll it out there, go figure it out. And that seemed to kind of be the thing that was going on.
Our third and last point on Winslow on Twitter comes from @_NBAEverything, so that's pretty all-inclusive there, and he writes, of Winslow point guarding the offense, considering Dragic is the only real point guard on the team, it actually is helpful.
And that was, again, in response to what I was saying. So,
right.
But
that's not exactly the case, though. Right, it's fine if he's running the point, but that, again, you know, the balance of minutes between James Johnson, who runs it when he's in there,
exactly,
as part of that second unit, that's...
The advantage of the way this versatile roster is built is that backup point guard is a position that's by committee. And that's correct. The interesting thing about it, right? That's what keeps the opponent off their game, kind of keeps them on their heels, because they don't know who's going to be in charge of the offense when Dragic is out. So it's just that whole interesting thing. All right, who was your standout player of the game?
For me, my standout player, and we actually forgot one from Chris Leach, he writes, Mickey, meaning Jordan Mickey, a better Okoro White? Unfortunately, Okoro White looked like he hurt his shoulder at one point playing defense and kind of hurt himself there. But to Chris's point, Jordan Mickey was my standout player of the game. Look, I wasn't really high on his acquisition. I know that there was a lot of talk about his ability to stretch the floor and also to guard the rim. But I thought he was probably going to be too stiff. That was not the case. He looked, again, albeit late in game against backup players, he looked really, really smooth there. But, you know, he was able to hold his own against Jan Mahimi. Had some nice plays against Kelly Oubre as well. He just looked really, really confident, not to mention the fact that he was able to knock down that game-winning shot as well. Finished with, 15 points?
Mm-hmm.
And just he looked really impressive, man. I got to be honest with you.
12 points.
Oh, I'm sorry, 12 points. Right, okay.
But two steals and a block too. He was 5 of 6 on his shooting. He made 2 of his 3 three-pointers.
Right.
I love Jordan Mickey when he was coming out of LSU. I thought that the Celtics were getting a steal when they drafted him in the first round. And I was over the moon when the Heat acquired him this summer. I thought I'm a believer in his potential, and that came out tonight. I mean that whole what did Chris Reichert call it? The three and B for right. blocks, right? So he had 2 three-pointers and a block in this game, and plus 2 steals, right? You could lump them together for stocks, which he had 3 of, and he was an effective rim protector. He was able to stretch the floor. There was a couple of catch and shoot situations with Justice Winslow delivering the passes, and he was just step into the shot and drain it, and that's impressive. I mean, he looks good shooting threes. Really impressive.
I almost think it's like a disservice sending him down to Sioux Falls, to be honest with you. I think at this point
you gotta, and that's the question that Chris is asking: is he better than O'Kara White? If O'Kara's going to get minutes, should Mickey get them? It's worth considering, right? That's a head-to-head battle for minutes.
Yeah, yeah, and it feels like it's not only O'Kara White, but also Bam Adebayo had a pretty big game. Played 23 minutes, finished with 15 points, 6 of 10 shooting. He looks smooth out there. He does some nice things. It seems like that three-headed monster there of who gets minutes for the you know versatile big. Look, Olynyk is probably ensconced as a starter. He shows real flashes and incredible versatility, but
he's also
amazing how these other bigs. Yeah, yeah, and it's amazing though how we have these other bigs that can do so much. And you know, a couple of years ago, you probably wouldn't have thought Miami was on the cusp of being, you know, one of the most versatile teams out there. You look at this roster up and down. It was a point they made during the broadcast. Really, really good versatility, not just offensively but defensively as well. Napa
know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
So my standout player is going to be a standout players. I'm cheating the first time we do the segment, and I'm sorry. But nice. It's the Johnson brothers. I mean, the Heat were down 30-19 after the first quarter. Johnson and Johnson step in, and it really felt like they took over that second quarter. And there, you know, Winslow had a nice series. Olynyk had a really, really great second quarter, and I almost considered him making my standout player, but I decided it would be more fun to cheat instead. But James Johnson, 12 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists. Tyler Johnson, 14 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists. Both of them combining for just 2 turnovers, right? So that's... And by the way, James Johnson, 3 fouls in the whole game. So that's a step up from when he was getting 3 fouls in the first 5 minutes of most of these preseason games. So, look, I think that it's clear right now that Spoelstra's best bet for the bench is to bring Johnson and Johnson together. I know I keep saying this, but it really is incredible what their chemistry is. It looks like Tony Parker and Tim Duncan out there. And I'm not, like, it really does. Like, they predict each other's movements. They're so in tune with each other. And Spoelstra being able to hang his hat on that duo off the bench is such a... It provides so much stability for that second unit. It really feels like this Heat team is a team of 2 duos, right? And it's the Johnson brothers on the bench. And as the starters, it's Dragic and Waiters who have developed this chemistry together of playing with each other unselfishly but selfishly at the same time, being able to lead the offense respectively. It feels like that both, you know, the starters have their duo that work well together, and the bench has its duo that works well together. And you know, you can toy with the pieces around those guys, which Spoelstra has been doing, but ultimately it's those two things that might end up mattering most, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so we've got a new segment here called Second Guesses, and what we're gonna do is just second guess things that the Heat did. So first one was, and we touched on it earlier, Justice Winslow in the corner. Look, there's obvious flaws organizationally and fundamentally when you've got Justice Winslow on the floor with other ball handlers that need the ball also to be effective, like somebody like James Johnson. And Winslow's just standing in the corner. But I've got a note for Justice Winslow. You got to cut to the basket hard. You've got to figure out how to maybe set screens. Maybe that's Spoelstra coming in and saying, look, you're going to be our screen setter on this. You're going to be our secondary ball handler on this in for as an outlet. Winslow's got to get involved in the offense. There's not going to be room for Winslow plus G League players in the regular season. There's not going to be room for that lineup. So they've got to figure out how to incorporate him. You think about like Tony Allen in Memphis, right? How he was constantly setting screens, getting involved in the action. Even though defenses never respected his three-point shot, they would always, you know, fall back on him, play off of him defensively. But if you involve him in the action, you get him cutting to the rim when defenses are ignoring him, and that way he's getting wide open shots at the basket, we've got to get him involved a little bit more. What's your note?
You know, I'm totally blanking. I didn't have anything at all.
Didn't you have the broadcast note?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. So not a second guess so much as a note of observation. That's what it was. It wasn't a second guess. It was just a note from today's game.
Yeah, we'll work on the title of the segment. We might just call it notes.
Okay. So the note from today's game was a point brought up by Eric Reed, originally talking about the marksmanship of Washington's Bradley Beal and Jody Meeks, who just joined the team as a free agent, talking about the incredible shooting there and pointing out on the broadcast that those are two players that you wouldn't want to play horse against. Then Tony Fiorentino points out that Eric Reed used to have some nice range as a shooter himself, although not quite as lengthy as Beal's and Meeks. And then he referred to Eric Reed as the Massapequa Flash, I guess, dating back to Eric Reed's playing days. I guess he's out of Massapequa, New York, I guess. I can't picture Eric Reed as a player. I guess it's been quite a while. We didn't ask him about it the last time he was on his show. But
no, we should have him back on and ask him just 20 minutes, just drill him about the Massapequa Flash and the origins of that. I want the origin story.
That was a hell of a line to drop in there, somewhat innocuously in the middle of the third quarter.
I've first of all, something we're not talking about enough is the Tony Fiorentino victory lap. I mean, he's doing like, if he could just start dropping Massapequa Flashes every game, I'm in. Like, just completely obscure inside jokes that nobody understands but laughs at. I'm so in on that. I know he's done that basically his entire career, but let's keep it going. I also have a semi-related note to the broadcast and a player, so maybe this is kind of nice, kind of bow tie at the end here. Matt Williams, man, look, go Knights. UCF alum, historical great three-point shooter at the collegiate level. I might be exaggerating, but when you're checking in for the first time and Eric Reed is saying things like set the three-point record at University of Central Florida, you know, walks in and can already hit the NBA three, blah, 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 is just talking you up. And as he is wrapping his little spiel up on you, you get the ball on a catch and shoot, and then you brick your first shot off of the backboard. You can't do that, man. If Eric Reed's talking you up, you got to at least hit rim. You got to at least hit rim on that. You got to at least hit rim. So that's my last note. All right, David, what do we got next?
Well, our last game of the preseason is Friday's upcoming game against the Philadelphia 76ers. That's on Friday the 13th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. The game's actually going to be played at the Sprint Center in Kansas City, Missouri. Unfortunately, not a televised game, so there's no way to watch that, but you can listen to it on 79 New Ticket.
So you and I cover basketball games, and every time I've done it, and I'm assuming you've done it, there's been television stuff around, right? Like cameras and a broadcast crew. I can't even imagine being at the, like, somebody's got to cover that game, right? Like the local Kansas papers, whatever. Like somebody's gonna, like, imagine that the Heat beat reporters will be there, like tweeting out play by plays. That's got to be so weird as a reporter. I know this is a little inside baseball for our listeners, but that's gonna be weird, right? Like not having to step over cables or like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no camera. I mean, they're there hours beforehand.
Yeah.
They're there. When I'm there for a shoot around in the mornings, camera crew guys are already showing up there, setting everything up. And it takes like a long time before games to get all these different segments filled out. And then you're right, just the sheer amount of equipment. And we're talking about Magic preseason games, not exactly a hot ticket item, and it still involves that same level of technical, you know, equipment and everything else. So all of a sudden here you are in Kansas City and it's going to be quiet. Not are they going to draw a lot of fans? I mean, it's a maybe Joel Embiid is a, oh well, that's probably what it is. He went to Kansas, right? So
what do you mean? Yeah, so he'll be there is what you're saying?
Yeah, Joel Embiid, yeah, is Kansas City, Missouri. I guess
he lives in Philadelphia now.
Well, I understand that, but I mean, he's the draw, right? I'm trying to figure out
why they would want why they like basketball. Well, they're big. Kansas basketball's big, so maybe they'll show out for some. I don't know if they're. Look, everybody knows Seattle is the next. If the NBA expands, Seattle's the first one, right? And if they expand, they're going to want to expand at an even number, so they're going to at least bring in two. Is this does Kansas come out and say, "Hey, we want a pro team too because we love our college team so much"? Do they? Is there like kind of this grassroots movement to come out and just support any professional basketball team? Just like wildly support them. Like if you're Kansas and you want, like if you're the governor, right, and you want an NBA franchise, like you can kind of have your legacy be, "I brought an NBA franchise to Kansas," or it's Missouri. Is it Kansas or Missouri?
Kansas City, Missouri. There's Kansas City, Kansas, okay. Which no one cares about. This is Kansas City, Missouri. Okay.
So if you're the governor of Missouri and you want to just kind of like retire and your legacy is I brought an NBA franchise to Missouri, shouldn't you be kind of like encouraging your people to just go out and just support and just go nuts, just go absolutely nuts for this meaningless preseason game so that like Adam Silver's like, huh, if they're going nuts for this meaningless preseason game, they must be a great NBA crowd. I don't know.
That's it's possible. It looks like they have other basketball related events there. They actually have a capacity of 19,000. So I mean, it's a pretty huge arena.
That's as big as
American
Airlines Arena is, right?
Absolutely, yeah. They've got a Katy Perry concert coming up in a couple weeks too. So
what's coming up in a couple weeks?
Katy Perry.
Oh well, she'll sell the place out.
They've got Janet Jackson late next week as well. This is
you couldn't like SeatGeek couldn't give me a good enough deal to go in one of those concerts. I wouldn't go there.
Lana Del Rey, January 9th.
All right. I think once we start talking about Lana Del Rey, it's time to wrap up the show. That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. Reminder to send in your mailbag questions to lockedonheat@gmail.com. That's for next Monday. You can also tweet them over using the hashtag AskLOHeat. And remember, for these recaps, we're taking Twitter comments and questions, just, you know, ones that are specific to the game, so you can always just, you know, hit me and David up on Twitter and we'll try to get to as many as we can during the recap shows. You could subscribe to Locked On Heat on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Theme song is by CeeLo Keys. Outro music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.